Jamie Brickhouse's memoir, Dangerous When Wet, A Memoir of Booze, Sex, and My Mother, was published to critical acclaim last year. It has now just been released in paperback. With brutal honesty and wry humor, Brickhouse chronicles his addiction to alcohol, to men, to good times, and to the adoration of his Texas tornado of a mother, Mama Jean, in his debut memoir. Again, the title of the book is Dangerous When Wet, and we welcome Jamie Brickhouse to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thrilled to be here. Thrilled to be here. How are you?
I'm doing fine. At what point did you know you wanted to write this particular story?
It first occurred to me when I was in rehab, but it was kind of a joke and a pie in the sky thing. I had written sporadically over the years from high school, and then done some freelance writing here and there, and worked in publishing. But I would say, seriously, 2 years after I was sober and a year after my mother, Mama Jean, had died, was when I got into a writing workshop to see if I had a book in me. And that workshop gave me the confidence to discover that I can write and that I had a story to tell. So, short answer to your question, 2 years after I was sober and a year after my mother died.
Does that become part of the grieving process and understanding a very complex relationship?
Absolutely. It was part of the grieving process. It was cathartic for me. It was therapeutic. However, I didn't write it for any of those reasons. I wrote it because I am an artist and wanted to express myself artistically, and writing was my medium, is my medium. And it was a story I had to tell. So ultimately, and I know enough about writing that I know that it's not enough for me for it to be my catharsis or my therapeutic endeavor. I have to, once I put it on the page, it's for the reader, and I have to create that catharsis, cathartic experience in the reader, and I hope I did that with a lot of laughs along the way. So.
Yeah, of course. So your sobriety came before the death of your mother.
That is correct. And she helped with that.
And you write about that. Did that put your sobriety to a challenge when you lose someone, like obviously a parent, but also someone that you have such a complex relationship with?
You mean, in other words, was my sobriety threatened with her death? I.e., was I gonna drink over her death?
Or yeah, or just the challenges of dealing with that as well as the grief of the loss.
Absolutely, but you know what? By the time, you know, and this is a key part of the book. She was always on to me about my drinking from an early age, and she was not a drinker. She was a social drinker, meaning she could take or leave it. My father was a drinker, and if alcoholism is an inherited disease, then I would have gotten it from my father's side of the family. But she helped get me into rehab, and then I had, after rehab, relapsed several times, unbeknownst to her, and there's a point in which I talk about in the book when she starts to lose her mind because of Lewy body dementia. I think Alzheimer's, only weirder and worse. And the first time I see her after she's lost her mind, and it's pretty devastating to me, and I'm struggling at that moment with 7 months sober. And I think, you know, who would blame me if I drank over my mother losing her mind? I mean, this is a perfect time to drink.
Right.
And I didn't think she even knew me during that meeting, during that first visit with her. And then as I turned to leave, she grabbed me, and she looked at me, and she glared at me, and she was fierce, and she could scare the hell out of anyone, out of Joan Crawford. And she looked at me, and she said, "You've been drinking." And I said, "No, I haven't." And she said, "Don't lie to me." And I thought, you know, this is a perfect moment. I could drink. And I thought, no, but there's another way to look at it. If you can't stay sober for yourself, do it for her. And I said, "You don't have to worry anymore." And that was the push I needed to get through that that last bit of white knuckling it until I could finally reach a year sober. And I haven't had a drink since. So she died 5 months after that, which has also coincided with about the time that I reached a year sober. So when she died, it did not even occur to me to drink. I was just so grateful for her help and finally at that point I wanted it for myself. So I was, in a way, you know, I kind of felt like to drink, if I did drink over her death, it would have been an insult to her. So in a way she kept me sober. Both, in a way, her death kept me sober, I guess you might say.
Mm-hmm. Did you fully understand, or at what point did you start to fully understand, and even did the writing process help you understand this, of the ingredients to which you became an alcoholic, of all of the things that came together that allowed that to happen to you?
Yeah, absolutely. By the time I started writing it, I had been... as I said, I was sober 2 years, but I had been getting sober for several years, i.e. had been in a lot of 12-step meetings and talking about my alcoholism and the nature of alcoholism. So when I came to the page, I had a decent understanding of that. But certainly there was revelation in the writing and all of the... And just how much of an alcoholic I was, or am, rather, because I'll always be an alcoholic. I'm just an alcoholic in recovery. But I believe, for me, that I'm hardwired as an alcoholic. Like, in other words, whether or not my mother was overbearing or she was overbearing and domineering, there's no question about that. That's not up for debate. And I love her very much, but whether that made me an alcoholic or whether, you know, the fact that I loved the glamour and sex associated with drinking made me an alcoholic, and then I went after that so that I was in a drinking culture. I don't think any of those things made me an alcoholic. I think I was born an alcoholic, and it was just, you know, inside of me waiting to be released. Because I think if a non-alcoholic has something terrible happen in their life, maybe they'll drink over it for a while because they're seeking release. But eventually the consequences of the booze will, you know, they'll stop and say, oh, you know, this is making me feel awful, or I'm not able to get to work anymore, or I'm getting a DUI, and then they'll stop because they're not hardwired for that, whereas the alcoholic can't stop. I don't know if you've heard this term, one of the descriptions of it is it's a disease of more. You always want more, no matter how destructive that more is for you.
In writing the book, was it always your intention to share so much, or did it come out naturally in the fact of living with HIV, which you had not even shared with your mother, the suicide attempts? Was that something that came out consciously, or did you just find yourself writing about it?
Well, anything I shared in the book is not gratuitous. Even some of the sexcapades, as I call them, and even the drunkalogue stories, it's all in service of the story I'm telling. So, you know, there are plenty of stories I didn't share that, you know, that might be funny, might be shocking, might be sad, but, you know, just didn't fit with the story I was telling. So everything, I felt like everything in there is not TMI, too much information, the term which I really don't like, actually, because I feel like it's a little bit censorious. I knew in writing this memoir, I knew I was putting, I was going to put myself out there and telling, and if you're going to do it, I feel like you really need to be completely honest and not hold anything back, at least in telling the kind of story I'm telling. However, that said, I certainly went through hurdles of what I was going to reveal. First of all, when I started writing it, I was just so, you know, I was having the thrill of writing and like, oh my God, okay, I've got something here and I'm liking the way I'm telling the story. And then there was a moment of, you know, wow, do I really want to share this? Do I really want to tell the world I'm an alcoholic? You know, and then I kind of processed that fear and then kept going. As far as the suicide attempt, which was my alcoholic bottom, that was never a question that I was going to reveal that, because that is that was my bottom, and that's also the crisis moment when Mama Jean comes to flies up from Texas where she lived and I grew up, and comes up to New York where I was, and you know, that's the come to Jesus moment. So there was no way I was not going to reveal that suicide attempt. And my HIV, the fact that I'm HIV positive, which was one of her biggest fears, and she went to her grave not knowing, or at least not totally knowing. I think she always suspected it. There was a moment, you know, I was in the closet about that. I was diagnosed in 2002, and I'd only told my partner and a handful of friends. I'd never told my parents or family. Or a wider circle of friends, and I thought, you know, I could tell this story without revealing that, but in the end, I decided no, it's important and it's germane to the story, and it's also, you know, the book I think is much richer for having that in there, for having that revelation in there. And I'm glad that I revealed it, because, you know, it's liberated me. I told my father. My father is now dead. He died a year and a half ago, but I ended up telling him and all my friends, and basically, of course, now everybody knows, or anyone who cares to know, and it's no big deal. That was probably the last thing I decided to, the last big, you know, personal revelation I decided to include in the book.
You recently wrote an essay in the New York Times about overcoming the shame of a suicide attempt, which is not something, the second attempt was not something you did include in the book.
No, I did include, what I included in the book was the second suicide attempt. What I did not include in the book was the first suicide attempt, and that's what I wrote about in the New York Times.
Yes.
And that first suicide attempt, which was in 1995, was something, and I did not even consider putting it in the book, because I had pushed it so that I didn't even think about it. It's not that it was not a repressed memory, but it was just so far back in my mind that I didn't, that it wasn't even on the table to put in the book, because I was kind of in denial about it. I mean, I knew I did it, but in the same, you know, I didn't think about it. And when it happened, no one knew about it. No one knew about it until until right before I wrote about it in the New York Times. When that happened, and it was also, you know, an alcoholic suicide attempt, just like the second one. I took the pills. I woke up the next morning and nobody was the wiser. And I kind of wiped the sweat off my brow and kept going and shoved it under the bed and never told anyone, you know, not my partner, not my parents, not my psychiatrist several years later. And so when I was writing the book, it really didn't even come up as, oh, should I or shouldn't I talk about this, and when it did pop up in my mind, it was like, oh, that doesn't really count. I you know, maybe I didn't know what I was doing. I was drunk, but, you know, it was only a few pills. I didn't think that was going to do anything, and then I rationalized it away.
When you are at your bottom, and you hit that, and you hit that bottom, how aware was your mother of that bottom, and how did it change your relationship?
she was extremely aware of it. I mean, my bottom was, you know, a suicide attempt, and it was shattering to her that I had reached that depth. And in fact, she, you know, back to the HIV question, she had asked my brother if she thought I was HIV positive and thought that might be why I tried to kill myself, and which was, and at that point he actually did know. My brother knew, and he lied to her and said no. But my HIV had nothing to do with my suicide attempt. My suicide attempt was brought on by severe depression. Was because of severe depression brought on by copious amounts of alcohol, and that feeling of hopelessness. And but so after that, and after she helped, you know, she helped stage a little mini intervention after that, and then sent me to rehab. How it changed my relationship. I kind of realized that there was what she was all about, rather than, you know, sometimes I kind of ran away from her and tried to outrun her love because it was all consuming. Kind of like a, as I say in the book, it was like a, it cloaked me like a cashmere blanket in August, and it was suffocating. But I realized that it was her unconditional love in its purest form, if you will. And I realized that, you know, all she wanted for me, like I think most mothers and most parents, was my happiness and the best. And in a way, and after I started to get sober, for a while, I was doing it even while she was still alive and before she was sick. Even then, a big part of me was doing it for her, you know, to make her happy, and which I had done so many things in my life to make her happy, to get her acceptance, because I needed that, you know, her unconditional love. But eventually, how it helped me was that I wanted it for myself. And I kind of found my own way. And just like the writing, you know, becoming a writer, I couldn't have become a writer, seriously until after the booze was out of the way, until after the death of the booze and after the death of her. And she always wanted me to be a writer, but I kind of minimized that, talent and didn't nurture it and pursue it. And ironically, it wasn't until after she died that part of my life took off. And I, you know, so I, you know, I owe a lot to her for that. But it was so much me trying to please her, both in, you know, after I got sober and trying to stay sober, and then ultimately wanting it for myself, which I think is the key to any kind of happiness or career success.
Sure. The name of the book is Dangerous When Wet, a memoir of booze, sex, and my mother. It is published by St. Martin's Griffin. Jamie Brickhouse, thank you very much for sharing with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on. It was a pleasure.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book is Dangerous When Wet, published by St. Martin's Griffin. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.